Call the regular committee meeting of the Public Safety Committee of Newcastle County Council to order. And with us today, we have Council President Hartley Nagel, Councilwoman Kilpatrick, Councilman Sheldon, Councilman Tackett, Councilman President Pro Tem Penrose Hollins, Councilman Cartier, and Councilwoman Filler. What's your pleasure with the minutes of the previous meeting?
So moved.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to approve the minutes from the previous meeting. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. Okay, first on the agenda today, we have Ordinance 17082, and it is to amend the FY 2018 capital budget, appropriate $23,506 from the Clerk of the Peace technology fee account for the CloudView capital project for the purchase of an unmanned aerial vehicle, a UAV, by the Department of Public Safety. And what we'll have is Colonel will touch on each of these briefly, and if anyone has any questions, we can address them as we go along. Colonel Bond?
Colonel Vaughn Bond, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So as you stated, the first one, Ordinance 17-082, the $23,506, that is for a, what we call a drone, that will be one additional drone that we're adding to our fleet. As we all know, the drones have picked up popularity as well as usefulness in terms of dealing with operations. I brought with me, and he'll speak a little bit later on, but Sergeant Snyder, who oversees our drone, I don't want to call it a unit or not, and I think about it, but he oversees the operation of our drones. And so far this year, we have been involved with a few different incidents involving officer-involved shootings, as well as assisting WPD, Wilmington Police Department, with a few of their operations. We actually work with them jointly on the last few calls of service that I think Wilmington Police Department has had. So there's definitely a benefit in them. You're saying that the technology from when they first started to now, the technology has greatly improved and gaining more popularity, and it allows us an opportunity to view and get into places without compromising officer safety. It gives us a vantage point that, quite frankly, we never had before. So, again, it's a very useful tool. We're looking forward to acquiring this piece of equipment and even adding on to it because we just see the benefits down the road.
And these funds will come to us via our Clerk of the Peace and the Clerk of the Peace technology fee account?
Yes.
Okay. I know that's been done in the past, and I know that everyone's quite appreciative of what Kenny Bolden and his staff do. Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
It's the Clerk of the Peace Technology Fund? I thought it was Recorder of Deeds Technology Fund.
This is the Clerk of the Peace.
So
this
we each
one.
Have one?
That I'm
actually
not certain.
You know what? The first time that we did it was Recorder of Deeds, wasn't it?
Yes.
It was Kazakowski.
Right.
So
yeah,
you know what? I think that's a mistake. That should be Recorder of Deeds because I believe he's given us the funding for it again this time.
I didn't know we had more than one technology account.
Could we, someone clarify that? Because I was of the understanding that it was coming for the Clerk
of the Peace. Are we talking about the Clerk of the Peace?
Well, we're talking about the technology fund. Clerk of the Peace has a technology fund?
Clerk of the Peace has a technology fund.
Okay, so this, the drone, the $23,000 is coming from the Clerk of the Peace technology.
Which one?
Fund?
I have not seen it. I just walked in.
17082.
Yeah. I believe it's coming from Kazakowski. We want to confirm.
You know, it says Clerk of the Peace Technology.
I know, but yeah. I didn't know that they had a technology fund.
For them for about a year ago.
Okay. But you don't know if it's actually Clerk of the Peace or if it's Kazakowski?
The title says Clerk of the Peace.
It says Clerk of the Peace.
I know that.
Right. But they're questioning whether they thought it was Kazakowski.
No, I believe it's the Clerk of the Peace. It's Mr. Bolton.
Okay.
But she wants verification.
Oh. if you want to, I'll make a phone.
Well, can we just check on it before we vote on it tonight? Is that?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, what's the vote on it? Ken's got to give it up.
Mike will be happy.
You better have a lot of marriages coming up here.
Okay, I think you're going to find that it is the clerk of the peace. Ken Bolden had talked about this a little while back, and I didn't know whether it had all been completed, but he had actually talked about their technology fee and doing something with the police department. But we can verify it and come back before we vote on it tonight. Okay, 17083, amend the grants budget, appropriate federal grant award of $302,719 from the United States Department of Justice Victims of Crime Act, VOCA, Victim Assistance Program, through the Delaware Criminal Justice Council, to the Newcastle County Department of Public Safety's Criminal Justice Council, CJC, Newcastle County Police Department expansion of Victim Services Grant. Colonel?
Yes, basically what this is we're looking to increase the size of our victims' advocates. Currently we have three advocates in there, and we're looking to add two additional. One of those three that are currently in position will move to a supervisory rank. And the reason why I feel this is important, because nearly every victim of a violent crime has interaction with our victim services unit. They're the point people to make sure that the victims of violent crimes in particular are pointed in the correct direction as far as resources and getting them assistance. And what we've seen over the years is that obviously there's been an increase in the number of people who are utilizing their services. This is also going to give us an opportunity. We are looking at possibly, hopefully, being able to hire someone who's bilingual to help us reach out and communicate with the Latino Hispanic community. Because right now we have one person, and that's Carmen Mendez. And so we want to see an increase in that as well.
Okay. Any questions from council? Okay, hearing none, we'll go to ordinance number 17-084. Amend the FY 2018 approved operating budget. Increase the authorized position count for the Department of Public Safety, Division of Police Operations, by adding two additional victim assistance officers. Colonel?
And basically that covers the what I just spoke about, just the two additional civilians to that position.
Okay. Any questions? Councilwoman?
Just a quick question. So the people who will be added, are they like counselors? Is that what the purpose of this will be?
Well, they're not counselors. What they are is individuals who are trained and dealing with, they don't provide counseling services, but they are trained in dealing with victims of crimes. They are also well-versed at the resources that are available and helping them to navigate through a criminal process, whether it be the prosecution, if they're a victim of a crime, whether they're not necessarily always going into the Attorney General's office and getting this information, they can speak with us and we can help them to get through. If they're looking for funding for, say, for instance, that they need housing, they need, you know, some type of shelter or any other items of necessity, then they help them with those types of situations.
Okay. Any questions? President Pro Tem?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just think this is a very critical service, and I'm happy to see that our department is really sensitive to the needs of the victims of these various crimes. Oftentimes, people just left. I just read a story about a young man who was caught up in a terrorist act in Iran or someplace, and said when he got back home here in the States, he just felt all alone. There was no assistance from the government, nobody to help him. I think that the department should be applauded for reaching out, and especially also to be inclusive by trying to find someone who is bilingual to also assist the bilingual population.
Yeah. Very good. Very well put. Okay, the chair would also like to recognize this time Co-Chairman Street has joined us, Councilman Powers, and I believe Councilman Powers was kind of hiding on the other side of Councilman Tackett there for a while. Councilman George Smiley. Okay, next on the agenda is update. Thank you, Colonel. Update on the 911 center staffing, and we'll call on Chief Jeff Miller.
Thank you, Council. Jeff Miller, Chief of Communications. We were asked before, just before summertime, got into full gear to give an update as to how many vacancies we have within the Communications Division, what sections are they in, why we believe some of the vacancies exist, and what some of our hurdles have been in filling those vacancies. So a few PowerPoint pictures here I think will help us paint the picture. We have three operational sections within the Communications Division, and this is one of the dispatch sections. This is our fire and EMS dispatch area. And the green seats are currently what our staffing levels are authorized per shift. So in that work area, there are 10 consoles. Of those 10 consoles, there are three primary radio frequencies. There are two call operator positions, and mostly those dispatchers are dedicated to taking 911 calls that come from the city of Wilmington and from Newark for fire and EMS requests. And in today's world, we have a working supervisor who still answers 911 phone calls and dispatches whenever one of these dispatchers should become involved in a 911 phone call and cannot free themselves up to maintain that radio channel. So this is just more of a geographic sense of what the room looks like and how we fill it. So I went back to May of this year. We had four, we're authorized strength of 24. We have four shifts. The four gold color animated people up there are our supervisory personnel. We had in May, we had three vacancies. We had four people in training and 13 seasoned dispatchers that were capable of dispatching fire medical incidents. In June, we continued with four supervisors. We had 15 dispatchers. Two of the trainees were cleared to work on their own and ended up with three vacancies as quickly as June. In July, our vacancies increased to six. Our strength, thanks to council authorizing two additional positions for this fiscal year, at a request of four, we got two. We're happy to have those. So our strength increased to 26. Our dispatcher pool is at 14, two trainees, and six vacancies. And as of the most recent, August 25th, that's the last pay run we looked at, our numbers in fire medical communications, we have five trainees, and it's a little misleading. One of those five trainees is still in the background process, but those four trainees aren't dedicated to their training all the time because they were promoted from our call operators pool. So they went from 911 call takers to dispatchers, so to not completely deplete the 911 call operator area. We bring them over at night when it's not as busy or there's some downtime and they can get over there. So that's a picture of what it looks like in the fire medical section. Just to the right in the room is our police communications area. We dispatch for five police entities within Newcastle County, and our county police being the largest one. Every one of the available seats are occupied by each shift of six. We have a supervisor who, again, is a working supervisor who makes callbacks on 911 calls, takes in progress calls. We almost always have a special operations channel in force for our police department, for their MET teams and their special teams. We divided almost 3 years ago Newcastle County into two operational radio areas, Dispatch 1 and Dispatch 2, basically east side and west side of the county, because there were just too many officers on one radio channel. It wasn't safe. So we were able to support splitting those officers into a more manageable group of patrol vehicles on the radio and still capable of providing that dispatch or data assistance that they need out in the field. We do have four positions that have not been filled. They were authorized two fiscal years ago and sat unfunded for a period of time. and then that's what we're looking at here. We look at an authorized strength as of July of 16 of 28 police communication dispatchers, four supervisors, and then we had those four vacancies. And we've been working with our human resource department diligently over the last few months to get these positions filled. In 6:15, we lost the supervisor to a retirement, so that brought our vacancy level to 5. And most likely that supervisor will come as a promotion from within our career development. So one of those blue people will move up, become gold, and we'll still have our 5 vacancies. So currently of those vacancies that you see, we have made 4 offers, and they all seem like they will be successful. They're in the background process as well. We are kind of competing with paramedics and police with the number of background investigators we have. They're literally going through hundreds of background investigations right now. And the one person with a question mark on there is a preterm employee that has not gone to a step 2 decision yet, but that vacancy has been there for about 5 months. Still needs to be filled in overtime. So we move to our call taker section, and this is typically where our career development falls into play, and most people come in to become a public safety operator. We try to, during our busiest hours of the day, keep the center area as full as possible, up to 8 call operators. We developed a power shift, and from 10 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock at night, our data consistently shows over the last 3 years, they are our busiest 12 hours, so we try to staff based upon the volume of calls. I'm happy to say that this is the first year in my 22 years of being involved in the 911 system with Newcastle County that we've met our we have met, and we still continue to strive to meet our national goal of answering all of our phone calls within 10 seconds or less 90% of the time. 2 of the weeks we did that was in dead summer when we were very busy. So I'm quite proud of the work that our call operators have done. That's the first time we've seen that, and we've been remaining stable somewhere around 87 to 88% of the time we're doing that, and we still have a few vacancies. Once we get those filled, I'm confident we'll hit our 90%. Public safety operator section trims down a little bit. You see 2 extra white seats there, but from 10 o'clock at night to 10 o'clock in the morning, the call volume that dictates the demand is just not there. So again, we're staffing accordingly. 2 of the seats in the room we do not occupy. They are a complaint service officer, and typically they're filled with a police officer who calls back on incidents that don't need a police officer to come out to, but just needs a report to be taken. So we have a little bit of room for growth in the future for our call taker section should we ever increase. But with our call takers, their authorized strength is at 32, and that was effective July of 2015. And March of this year, it was quite an anomaly from the class that we had held, the telecommunicator certification class. We ended up hiring 10 new employees at that time, and 6 of those came from that class. And out of those 6, 4 are still with us. So in March, we had 11 trainees. It's quite an anomaly. I don't ever remember us having that many new people coming on board at one time. I don't think I've ever seen this, except for in this June, that we were for a very short period of time full. Every position in our call operator section was full, no one in training, and no vacancies. Things changed a little bit as we get into this past August, and we went through our promotions. But of our current 6 vacancies within the public safety operators area, 4 of those were promoted, all into the fire medical area. That's where they were interested in going. And then we had 2 others that just were no longer interested in being in that job. So that's where we stand with our current staffing. When it's all said and done, the communications division is a strength of 92. We have an operational strength on the floor itself of 86. We currently right now have 11 vacancies, but most of those vacancies are either at the offer or they're in the background process, and I feel confident that within the next 2 to 3 weeks we will be bringing in a large group of people to do a group training. And we are back, we have 32 people in the background process to do our second Citizens Academy, to try this again so that we can backfill all of our vacancies that are in our 911 area. So our fiscal 19 goal is to provide split frequencies. And I was going to take a moment to highlight back to the very first slide we saw in the operations area, is where the fire medical communications section is. The fire medical communications demand continues to grow. The call volume continues to grow each year, primarily in EMS. But some other things have complicated the job of the fire medical dispatcher most recently. And that's the way the field responders respond to fires. Our volunteer fire service has put an amazing demand on our dispatch resources. And I see it coming very close to where we were when we split frequencies with our police dispatchers. We have so much fire apparatus on the street for an apartment complex fire that we cannot manage more than one event on one channel anymore. So the day will come when we need to see a scenario where we're going to have a dispatcher, a tactical channel for an event, a backup tactical channel for a second event. We provide all the EMS and fire dispatch for Wilmington. That's always been a separate dispatcher. Our ALS and our BLS, both county and volunteer, is a separate dispatcher. One person for phones, and one person as a non-integral working supervisor that can fill in when somebody has to leave for personal reasons. So if we didn't move forward with filling those next two, we would lose that ability, where the two red X's are, to break the channels up like we've done with the police department. And we will continue to go down this road of just not providing a great service over the air for our field responders for both fire, medical, and EMS. And in the last three fiscal years, you see an increase of from 131,000 events to 135,000. That's both in the city of Wilmington and throughout Newcastle County for fire and EMS. So the numbers are there, the calls continue to increase, and the demand upon us to change the way we provide our service to our field responders exists there. I hope that is what council was expecting to see as an update, and I am available for any questions.
Okay. Chief, if I could, as the chair, I had mentioned before, and we went through a little frustration during the budget process, but as you know, and everyone on this council knows, the year before last, the administration agreed to fill 4 police communication specialists, and at that time, your request was for 4 additional fire medical, but you just worked it out to where you would do 4 police communication specialists and wait until the following year for the 4 fire medical, split it up. I look at open seats as vulnerability and liability. And you correct me if I'm wrong, and don't hesitate to correct me if I'm wrong, but what I'm hearing is that the 911 center operations, be it call operating, police communications, or fire medical communications, that with the volume of calls today, and the commitment to be able to work on tactical channels and monitor and answer people in a timely manner, what you've done is split frequencies in different areas of the county because of the volume of calls, the volume of radio traffic. So my question is, the 2 fire medical communications personnel that you did not get, how does that impact you?
I would go back to this slide, the one that shows the fiscal 19 goal. That shows us with our bottom line is I need one extra person per shift. We have four shifts. The two positions allowed me two shifts will run heavy and two won't. So there's no way I can operationally say on A days and D days we won't split frequencies. It's not going to be a viable solution for our field responders. And it would be hard for people to just keep up with, you know, what is an A day or D day or B day. But what that turns it into is, you know, what we end up with here is we would have those additional, the two additional positions in the room, but we wouldn't be able to make the operational goal of being able to split the frequencies throughout the county and reduce the workload that's on each frequency.
Okay. And this won't be my final question, but it's one that I'd like to at least put out there, is that I know enough to make me dangerous about the 911 center, and I think everybody realizes that. But when you look at law enforcement and you look at call operating and then you look at fire medical, and once again, correct me if I'm wrong, is that you're better apt to be able to look at time periods of the day and take a look at the workload for call operating and police communications versus the unknown factor of when a fire or medical emergency will occur. And the reason I'm saying that is that all the statistics in the world doesn't say, okay, when someone's gonna lie in bed and set the bed on fire with a cigarette, or the people are sound asleep with no smoke detectors, or a family member has a heart attack, motor vehicle collisions on the highway, major highways. So I guess the point I'm trying to drive home here is it seems to me, looking at these charts, listening to you, you've come leaps and bounds and you've got a pretty good handle on the call operating, the police communications, tactical channels, special ops. But you correct me if I'm wrong that we're lacking in the fire medical communications of having sufficient personnel on 24 hours a day to meet that same commitment to being able to answer the radios and dispatch when it needs to be done.
Your statements are true. I mean, we can always plan for the hurricane that's blowing up the coast, for the big snowstorm that you know is coming, and we can staff for that. But when we reduce staffing at, say, 11 o'clock at night in the fire medical area, it does not mean there's not going to be a three-story apartment complex on fire at 2 in the morning, which just recently happened, up north, and a significant single-family dwelling fire down in the Middletown area. And at that time, we were in our lowest level possible. I think we had four dispatchers on who are still responsible for taking 911 calls for medical and fire in the from Wilmington and from Newark. And as those calls continued to come in and they couldn't keep up with the radio traffic, they moved some of the call takers out of the call taker section and put them into the fire medical section so they could at least absorb the phone calls from them. But yeah, you can't predict when that fire is going to occur. You can't predict when the, you know, planes don't fly like they used to in the middle of the night in as much abundance as they used to. But FedEx and UPS and everybody else is in the air all night long. And one of those things falls out of the sky, you can't predict it's going to be at 2 in the afternoon or 2 in the morning. And we struggle through the car fire on the interstate at 9 o'clock in the morning, and you know, we take those 70, 80 cell phone calls that will come in, we punch through those and hope we don't miss any true emergencies in the middle of it. But same thing's happening anymore in the middle of the night. Everyone has a cell phone, they see something, they're called.
Councilman Cartier.
And just to go to the growth in the call volume, you know, it was trending up toward 135,000 calls, I guess, this year.
Right? Or just in fire medical.
Right. And what's driving that? What's driving the increase? More people?
Mostly medical. I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's fire. Fire each year, if it wasn't for fire alarms, they wouldn't be a dramatic piece of the puzzle. But it's mostly medical requests.
Mostly related probably to
the heroin epidemic is one. The northern area of the county is an older, growing older community that has more ambulance demand. And let's face it, I call them docking the boxes, but you get there with something that had no business going there, and the first place they call is us, 911, so that they can get them to a regular facility.
Say that again.
So you go to one of those MedExpress type places, right, and you're there with something that they aren't designed to handle. They call 911, and we send the volunteer BLS unit and the paramedics if necessary. So we've seen an increase in that as well.
Councilman Shelton.
Yes. I noticed the trainers up there. What is situated with their progress, trainees? How do you go about selecting them? What is their coursing that you teach or take?
The last large group you saw with 11, it's the first time we've ever done it this way. But remember, I was here over a year ago, and we had council, Smiley and Bell offered money to get a jump start on this courts idea, a citizens type academy, mm-hmm, so we can get people exposed to what this job really is, and it's a profession. And if they can figure out, this is really for me, I'm going to dedicate 40 hours to you, volunteer, and learn to become certified in becoming a professional telecommunicator in this business, we'll hand them a certificate. And to be honest with you, they could walk away from the course and go get hired in Maryland, Pennsylvania, mm-hmm, New Jersey. But we're trying to stagger our call operators so that as soon as this class is over, we're going to go to advertisement again. And that's one of our preferred qualifications, is that one of the people, they have a certification in a 4-hour telecommunicator course, not just the one we provide.
Right.
So anyone should rise to the top there. And it really worked well in this last class. So the 11 we brought in, we educated them in a classroom setting. So they had already had the basic 40-hour telecommunicators course out of the way. So that saved us at least a week, maybe even two. And then we just went over policies and procedures. Then we go over how to use a computer-aided dispatch system. And then usually last, because it's the easiest thing to figure out, is the phone system. And how to take the calls, manage the calls, and where to transfer them to and when. All those 11 people were on the floor in less than 3 months, which is something we've never done before. Then they get paired up with a trainer. Typically that takes about 6 months to get through that phase with that trainer on an individual basis. All but two were done in 3 months. So in less than 6 months, we had qualified, certified people sitting on their own answering calls without having someone tethered in with them and helping them through. And the two that struggled weren't involved in that original class anyway. They worked out well as well.
Now, as you know, not going through this, but I'm very much into training and apprenticeships and working way up, and you teach the person how you want it done. That's the one thing. They might leave to go to Maryland or somewhere else, but at least hopefully you can pick the cream out of the crop out of that. And 6 months is good. I like that idea. That's maybe somebody can work on it. Do you have the ability, to call somebody in if you have these apartment fires, on a will call basis? In other words, somebody has is on vacation, or off. Could you call them in to man those posts for 2 or 3 hours?
Yes. Each week we have, or each shift has a different on-call person, and they rotate that around through the shifts. So if this is your fourth day off and it's your fourth week off, it's your day to be available.
Okay.
And we have a radio pager that we can hit them with. We can call them, text message them. And in addition to that, some of our guys are astute enough that when they are listening, guys and girls, are listening at the firehouses, because many of them are volunteers, they hear something going on, they just drive in anyway and help us out. The problem is to drive in.
Right.
If they're coming from Middletown, or there's some people coming from Jersey or wherever, Our policy is be here in an hour or less, right. But I need you there in four. I needed you here 4 minutes ago.
Right. Yeah, because the calls are coming in. Right. That's good. Now, one more thing. How much space do you actually occupy, you think, in the public safety building?
Square footage-wise?
Square footage-wise, yeah.
Bill?
I mean, that's a...
Bill has that.
And you can just email him back later. You don't have to do it right now.
Yeah, Bill Streets, the assistant chief, we had calculated that for the building of the state for renting our space. About 12% of the public safety building is out here, 911 building.
12%.
Which is what in square feet?
I don't know. I have to look that. I've got to do my arithmetic. Okay, thanks.
We'll get you an email then.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I guess the new section of the council has been here 13 years. And we've heard, you know, pretty much the same thing for 13 years, although it's been increasing as we've heard about the cell phone usage, you know, in the population coming in, and one incidence can create numerous phone calls to the 911 call center, and you don't know, like you just mentioned, rooted in there where there is another issue or an emergency that you're trying to get through quickly enough to see, and nobody knows if somebody else has already called, you know, per se. And then ultimately at the end of the day, you're left with, you know, staffing issues, and you're trying to get through them, and you've got power shifts and everything else you're talking about. Have you ever considered, or has any jurisdiction ever just, you know, thought about making 911 a toll call?
I don't know that anyone's ever thought about it.
I mean, that would help your staffing, perhaps, and it would be a dedicated
charge per call.
Help my library
on your cell phone.
I knew you would laugh.
It's
like pasta. You throw it at the wall, someone.
If the colonel would lend me his drone, we could deploy it to the car fire and just let everyone know, don't call, we're here.
Put it on the webcam.
We know about it.
Any other questions?
I don't have any.
Yeah. Co-Chairman Street?
During presentation, talked about dispatch and dispatch, for example, calling the med team. And my question then is, if it comes to SWAT, whatever y'all call it, who makes that call? Dispatch, you, exec, who?
As far as what channel they would go to?
Who makes the call to deploy them in the first place?
That would come from the police department, based on what's taking place at the scene and what resources you feel are needed to deal with that situation. So the police department would make that call.
At what level?
That call, if it's a SWAT call out, then it's going to come from the staff level. Meaning command staff, captains, and above. Now, we've been notified through the sergeants, through the lieutenants, right all the way up through the chain. All right. But it would come from the staff.
Let me tell you why it's prompted. Either 68 or 69, whichever set of rides it won't deny. Somebody was stupid enough to call the county police in the Wounded High, in SWAT gear, with what I call recall back in the day at the time. That made an awful situation worse. It made the mess that everybody looks now on TV about Ferguson make look mild. That should never happen. And in my view, tackling an employment decision like that, at that level, ultimately should be made at your level or above, which exactly. So, I don't want you to feel like I blindsided you today, but I do want you to think about it, right. And I'm going to raise it again, because to me, the wrong call by the wrong person, the wrong situation, can escalate a situation into something awful.
Well, I'll just say this, that I think that having someone outside of law enforcement make the call, whether or not you utilize a special team, like a SWAT team, is a wrong call. First and foremost, a person doesn't have the skill set nor the knowledge to understand what you use, when you should use, and how you should deploy it. That is why with us, whenever the SWAT team is not utilized often, but before they're utilized, what they do is we have a threat assessment form that we fill out, we complete the threat assessment form. That works its way all the way up through the chain of command to the lieutenant colonel, to myself, if I'm available,
and we actually sit down, we go over it, time is on our side in most cases. And so we'll actually go through it and we'll weigh out the pros and cons. We had one not too long ago where as a staff, as a command staff, we said no, we weren't going to utilize SWAT. The reason being is that we were going after someone who was involved in drug activity. But during the course of the investigation, we found out that there were small kids inside of that house. And so now you're asking your question, okay, what's more important? You know, going after a drug dealer or taking a chance and going in there, you have some kind of confrontation, God forbid you have a use of force issue involving firearms, and you run the chance of one of these small children being injured or killed. So, you know, we take it very seriously. It's not something that we, you know, we just say, okay, send SWAT in there. So, but I, again, going back to my initial point, I think if you're looking at taking it outside of someone with law enforcement experience, I think that would be the wrong call.
Okay. Who is we with specificity? You say we make
command,
who's
command
we?
Staff. Someone at the level of captain and above. Captain, your majors, your lieutenant colonel, myself.
Does it have to be acquiesced by either you or the lieutenant?
Yes, we want to be the ones that ultimately is going to go to myself and Lieutenant Colonel, yes. But we do allow for the captain, because we have a confidence in the captain. One of our captains oversees the Special Operations Section and oversees SWAT. So we allow them to make those calls. But again, whenever they get those threat assessments, they're going to come up the chain and they're going to go through and we're going to have discussion about it just to make sure that we're utilizing them in a manner that's consistent with our policies.
Okay. Just giving you something to think about. Question two. In the presentation, there were two chairs and one of the senators said that those two chairs were used by police officers responding to making calls in situations where police didn't have to be deployed. What are those situations?
Those are the, they said CSO, if you look at the initials right there. Those are complaint service officers. And what they are is officers that take complaints over the phone. If we have a theft from motor vehicle, there's no suspect information, there's no physical evidence, it happens overnight, there's no other crimes associated with it, it's one time incident, then we can handle that complaint over the phone. Now, we always give the person a call if they're a victim. If you want a police officer to come out, then they have a right, they can ask for an officer to come out. Somebody has a bike stolen from their front yard. Again, there's no suspect information. We can take that report over the telephone. There's not a lot that we're going to do with it unless we can determine that that is tied in with additional crimes. We still pass on that information. We still make officers aware of what's taking place. But again, if you have a rash of theft from motor vehicles, say for instance, here recently in the Central District, I think we got hit pretty hard. Now, when we have a rash of theft from motor vehicles or thefts from sheds and things of that nature, we are going to send an officer out there to do processing, to actually do the investigation. But if it's a isolated incident, something like that, we'll take that over the phone.
Let me be completely clear.
Yes, sir.
You said just now that if you want somebody to come, somebody will come.
Yes.
Okay. I want to make sure that, because in the city of Wilmington, somebody breaks in your car, you can't get an officer. I don't care, and I'm tired of getting tongue-lashed about that because their policies ain't coming, period. And I just hope that we don't get reduced to that.
No,
because the people that complain, and I think Mayor Torres himself, well, I'm a taxpayer, it's my car, and I need more than a case number for my insurance company, and situation in hand. Well, not only did they break in my car, but they broke in two other cars, and I've got the other guy's checkbook sitting here in my car. They took out of the other car, still didn't get caught. And I'm just hoping to do everything we can not to get to that point where, oh no, we're not sending anybody, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
No, I don't foresee us getting to that point. And also, if we have any type of evidence that's left behind in a situation like what you're talking about, we're going to send an officer out. We also have evidence detection specialists that are assigned to each squad. So a lot of times we may take the actual complaint over the telephone, that theft of motor vehicle, but we'll still send out an officer to go out there and process the vehicle to see whether or not we can lift any kind of latent prints off of there. The actual report itself might be taken over the telephone, but an officer will go out to process it.
Chief, that's just music to my ears, but that's it.
You can verify with your your equal in the city. They don't do it, they ain't doing it, and anybody complains about it, go down saying, I think it's outrageous. So thank you, sir.
Sorry, Mr. Chair.
You're fine, Co-Chairman. Councilman Smiley?
Yeah, I just want to acknowledge what's just been said. I recently had a situation. I did not call in as Councilman Smiley. I just called in that someone had come in my driveway and stolen a part off my car. I can see clearly there's no fingerprints. I looked up and down the street. The fart isn't there. I just want to get it on record in case when other people start waking up, there's a trend in the neighborhood. No fewer than four times was I asked, do you want an officer to come out? Do you want an officer to come out? You know. I'm always going to say no just in case they got a warrant, but but I just want to say at least four times they did offer, and they didn't know that it was Councilman Smiley. It was just trying, and I just needed to get it in there, as I tell all the people in the district. You always need to call it in because you don't know what's happened two blocks over. So I just want to acknowledge what he said. At least did take place a few weeks ago with me.
And you really think when you called from your house, they didn't know who you were?
It was my cell phone.
I'm going to raise the question again. That makes it even more likely.
Absolutely, because they have me on call block.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome,
thank
sir. You,
Chief.
Just a lot of times we may not be totally aware. I had an incident back in my public safety career where they weren't aware that I was the president of the National Emergency Number Association, 911. And I was being asked to contact that person to talk about 911. But Chief Miller is extremely active in public safety communications, not only here in the state of Delaware, but on a national level. And he's currently the president of the Delaware Association for the National Emergency Number Association, all three 911 centers countywide, and then the other centers in the city of Wilmington, city of Newark. And in addition to that, and you once again correct me if I'm wrong, and I just think it's important sometimes for us to understand who our division chiefs and who our leaders are and what their experience are, because I consider you a subject matter expert on a national level, not just local. But you're very active in the Associated Public Safety Communications Officers, national communications organization on a national level. You're very active in the National 911 organization. And I just want to close it with one thing. If we don't think that that's important to turn around and stay current and to network with what's going on throughout our country and what's involved with 911, the vital link, the core that brings it all together, I don't know what does. So, I mean, I think we should applaud you for your efforts and what you're involved in, but that does nothing but enhance I think your knowledge base and subject matter expert to run our 911 center in this county. And I said I was going to finish with one note. It's important, and I say this for our administration's ears, because I know what happens with budgets. I did many a budget. I'm still doing budgets. But a lot of times you look at travel and civic, you look at education, and there are conferences, and then there are conferences. And I think the conferences that involve law enforcement, public safety communications, public safety, emergency medical services, emergency management, we see what's going on around us in this country. It's critically important to keep our leadership current and active in networking with others throughout this country. Not only learning, but sharing what we do here in Newcastle County. So with that, I just want to compliment you on what you do and how you do it, and all the folks in the 911 center. And I think we're all appreciative of what you folks do.
No, I appreciate the accolades, but I'm not sure what I should say after that.
Thank you.
I will follow if there's no more questions.
Any other questions? Co-Chairman Street.
Just one comment. You know, it's one thing to sit here and look at the data, look at the presentation, but day after the fire in Canby Park, former director of public safety, Joe Bryan, made me go in the 911 call center. And for those of you who haven't been in there, I would strongly suggest and urge you to do so, because you have a different level of appreciation and respect for what folks do when you're in there looking at it and having a feel for the call that's coming across, as opposed to looking at the presentation. It's just two completely different things. I would suggest anybody that hasn't been, take the time to go, and I think you'll come back and agree with what I just said.
Yes, you're always welcome. Anytime. We actually have a structured ride-along program. The county executive, the CAO, has been through it, and a lot of the management is starting to go through it. But if you got a couple of hours, maybe two or three, we can sit you in each section. We'll even let you talk on the radio if you'd like.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Chief. Our next item is, and I think, Colonel, you may have given it, but you might want to expand on a little bit more, the update and overview of the unmanned aircraft program.
Yes. As stated earlier, you know, we're relatively new in this, and already we're starting to see the benefits of having the drones in operation. We've been able to use them on a few different incidents, and you know, I tell you, the technology is just consistently growing. The camera footage and the videos and the feeds that you're able to get have been a tremendous help. So Sergeant Snyder has been involved with this from the onset, so I asked him to come today with a presentation, and he'll be able to deal with any questions that you may have. Snyder?
Thank you, sir. I'm Sergeant Brent Snyder, the supervisor of the aviation or drone unit. Just to give you a quick brief as to what our current status is and what we're looking for in the future. Currently, we have four officers that are FAA certified through Part 107. All the officers went through an FAA course in drone usage and also other aviation laws. Went and took a FAA test and was certified to fly drones through the Part 107 federal law. We have currently a training COA. Basically, that gives us a restricted area to fly in, to train, and to do simulated missions. The reason for the COA and not the license is a COA gives us the ability to go outside of 107 restrictions, flying at night, over crowds, things like that, in public safety, eventually we're going to need to be able to do. So currently we are in the process of completing a full jurisdictional COA for all of Newcastle County. That will give us the abilities to fly outside again of the 107 regulations. One of the biggest things is actually to be able to fly at night or in low light conditions. And I'll touch on that briefly as to why that's important. And it'll expand the area that we can do it. And also, we're looking at, again, a second aircraft to do multiple aircraft operations. Currently, all four officers train at least one day a month. We're all in inside units, so when we have the ability, free time, an hour here or there, we actually get together and go out and fly again just to keep current on our skills and everything else. Some of the things that we've actually been involved in, myself included, spent over 16 hours down at the Middletown Barricade for Corporal Ballard when he was shot and killed at the suspect's house. The reason why multiple aircrafts are needed is that that incident actually required four separate aircraft of varying sizes and abilities throughout the night and day to maintain aerial footage of that incident, and also to provide the incident commanders with the information that they needed. From the larger aircraft that took overviews to see where all personnel were actually located and make sure that they were safe and in the areas they were supposed to be, to the one aircraft that used a thermal camera to try and search for the suspect through the windows, and the smaller aircraft that we tried to fly into the structure to actually try and find him. However, due to the conditions inside the house, we weren't able to. We used the aircraft for one of the department's officer-involved shootings to take aerial footage of the crime scene as to where the suspects committed their crime, the travel that they or the path that they traveled, where the officer interacted with that officer, and from that point where the shooting occurred and where the suspect was actually taken into custody, to give a better visual representation for any prosecution that might happen. One of the other major ones, we got called in, and this is why COAs are important. A Wilmington police officer along with probation and parole was shot at one night, called in. We responded in to assist the Wilmington Police Department with their drone operator, and actually were flying at night with the thermal cameras to make sure that as the tactical teams and the officers cleared alleyways and cleared streets, that there weren't shooters in the alleyways or on rooftops, to make sure that they were safe there, had safe overwatch, so that they weren't going to become targets themselves and shot and killed. Recently we had, Wilmington had a homicide over in Browntown. We went out there to assist with a barricade where they believe this homicide suspect was barricaded in, to provide aero support and tactical considerations for the incident commander. We did down in the Middletown Peach Festival, traffic management and crowd control for the fire department, the police department down there, letting them know where the larger crowds were, how the traffic was flowing, to make sure that during the parade route there was no there was nothing to impede the flow of that parade. When there was a medical call, is to probably what's the easiest way for that medical personnel to get there. And then we assisted, DLDOT asked for some help just getting some footage. They were trying to lay down a footbridge down in the riverfront area for safety with the high power lines and everything else that was down there. So currently, the reason why one of the fundings we're asking for is this is the new drone that we're actually looking at. Drone technology doubles every 3 to 6 months. They can become smarter, faster, and smaller. This one has more capabilities than the current one we have. Some of the reasons why we want this aircraft, one is in the state of Delaware, everybody is there's a lot of agencies are starting to go towards drone programs. It has been everybody's been going to a DJI product, which makes pilots interchangeable, equipment interchangeable, and interoperability amongst law enforcement agencies and DEMA that much easier. Aircraft also coming down to prices with the DJI, their online software updates, so we don't have to go out to the company that we currently have. We can just log online and make sure that they're updated every time we fly. Replacement parts are also easier because it is a larger company that has more availability of the products. Just some of the specs on the aircraft. It's got a flight time of 38 minutes, so you're at least getting 25 minutes. You want to give yourself a little bit of buffer so that if you got to encounter any wind or anything else, you can get down safely. When you start putting on a larger camera, obviously the flight time goes down. However, that camera is a 30 optical zoom, so you know you can zoom. We use that at the Ballard incident. We're a block and a half, 2 blocks away, and we're able to almost see all the way into the window. And you'd actually probably be able to read a license plate from that distance. It's got multiple batteries, so the current one we have has one, so if the battery fails, then it's going to fall out of the sky. This one has two, so it has a better ability to land safely. It's got multiple cameras that we can put on there and interchange them with other aircraft. Just basic dimensions. It is weather resistant. Two of the important things, though, for safety-wise on the bottom, it's got a separate camera system for the pilot. How we normally fly it, or how this aircraft is flown, is with two individuals. One person independently controls the cameras. The other person actually flies the aircraft. Having that second camera, that specific camera for the pilot to know exactly which way is going forward is very important because you can get it's easily to get disoriented. If you look at the camera system and the camera operator has it turned 280 degrees in the opposite direction, you're going to actually go in the wrong way. And then what this has and what most modern day ones has is a collision avoidance system. So even if it's out of control or even if you've lost control, it's not going to run into anything or fly into anything. It's just the one that we're looking at has, as you can see, multiple ways to mount a camera system. Ideally, eventually, we're going to go with, it's going to have the ability to do all that, but eventually we're going to go with the two camera system, which will give you some ability to not only have through visual light, but also through thermal. And instead of having to bring the aircraft back land it, switch it out, and then put it back up. We can just toggle back and forth depending on what the commander's needs are at the time. These are just a bunch of the multiple camera systems that are out there. And then with those cameras, they can be changed out on other DJI products. That's the other reason why we're looking at this system. Some of the important things is, I mean, obviously drones are being more prevalent. There was actually FEMA put out a email to everybody through DEMA. I received it that if the hurricane comes up, either hurricane, they were putting it out there. Anybody, that, any law enforcement or public safety agency that had drone footage or the ability to use a drone could use the software to actually get overlays so they can do damage assessment faster and easier. It actually does topographical layouts for DEMA, and they were actually asking for that information and asking for that assistance. So as things progress, it's just more and more everybody's going to be using them, and they are going to be more prevalent and help out with public safety. So are there any questions, sir?
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, sir.
We appreciate it. Colonel, next up, overview of the pop-up play PAL play areas in various communities.
Yes, sir. It's been probably one of the biggest surprises I think that we've had over this summer as far as our community engagement. That was the brainchild of Officer Pierce over here. And I definitely wanted him to come forward and introduce himself to council and also just provide just the background on how we came up with this initiative and just the success that we had. And we're looking at definitely doing it again next year. Prefer that we not do it in the middle of the day when it's 105 degrees outside and we wait till a little bit later on in the evening. Or she might be looking for another chief. it was very hot out there. It was a couple days I went out. So without further ado, I'll turn it over to him.
Good afternoon, Council. I'm Officer First Class Anthony Pierce with the Community Services Unit. Only been with the unit for about a year and a half now. And upon entering the unit, Sergeant Reynolds basically challenged the unit to come up with new innovative ideas. A little background about myself. I came born and raised in New York City. And in New York City then, they had play streets. So I knew I can walk three streets down the road. And the street was completely shut off for children to play. It was that, you know, growing up, you can't play in the street, so it was just fun, hey, we get to play in the street, so it was one of a good thing. Additionally, when I went to University of Delaware, I did, we called us the Yellow Hats. Basically, we went into the east side of Wilmington and actually played with the kids in the east side just to promote education and things of that nature. Just a positive role model for those kids in that community. And then being in the community services, our PAL is part of our unit. We have PAL officers, so I thought being part of the unit, might as well go to the PAL and interact with the kids there. So those three together made me think of, hey, why not put them all together and do what I learned in New York down here. What really jogged is when I was meeting with the leasing manager over at Hampton Walk Apartments where we did our first play zone, and she said the kids don't have anything to do. So I said, hey, if they don't have anything to do, why not give them something to do, at least for a short period of time under our thing. Our niche would be that police officers would be the one running these streets. And in New York, it's all PAL staff, which surprising to me. I didn't know that growing up. But when I reached out to them, they said that the police officers in New York City, NYPD, has nothing to do with their PAL. It's completely separate. And I just didn't understand that, so figured we just let the police officers go out and have that positive interaction, especially in the time and day that we have now. So I thought that was a good idea. The way we chose our locations was two goals. One is our TAPS program, which we're all familiar with, and secondly, each officer knowing their jurisdiction and the type of kids and families that are in that neighborhood. So that's how we chose them. And each play zone, we were able to have board games, basketball, football, some workbooks, coloring books. A couple of our female officers love the, if I get it wrong, like the little wrist thing that they string them together, wristlets. So a lot of the little girls gravitated to that, chalk, and the most important is us interacting with them. We got our funding through HIDA, I think it's HIDA, we
Lori Kane. She reached out to the U.S. Attorney's Office, and they directed her to them. So we got the grant where we were able to purchase all those equipment. We actually went to Walmart. They were helpful. They gave us a little, because we worked with them with our book bag giveaway last year, so they were more than willing to help out with some of the supplies as well. And then some of the individuals in the community were so excited about it. So one community at Hampton Walk, the lady came and had hot dogs and everything for the children. So it was an awesome turnout. The feedback was just awesome. Everyone was like, when are we coming back? It was to the point where we had specific communities at first, but we had to basically broaden our scope of where we're going to have it. So we were able to adjust fire and actually get Mona County in Northwest and Central. So going forward, I see us doing that as well, hitting all counties, but we were able to get to one community twice, and I think we had the biggest impact in there because we were able to identify one individual who was, he wore size 12, but he was wearing a size 11 because he just couldn't afford it. So with the conclusion of this Powell Play Street, we had our back to school giveaway. We were able to give away 250 book bags. In addition to that, with partnership with Councilman Sheldon, I believe it was, we had suits and shoes. And as soon as we saw the size 12, we ran to them and took them. And then we were able to deliver them to that young man. And that was just an awesome feeling for the whole unit, but more specifically for Corporal Sunny Allen, who she was able to get that bond with her, with him, to actually learn that information. So if he weren't out there, we wouldn't have the information. And if he weren't out there, he would still be squeezing his foot in a shoe that doesn't belong to Sada and him. So in the future, we want to just be able to go and hit each one of those communities more often, because I think the one shot hitters, I don't know how much, it's an impact, but I don't know how much of an impact. So I would like to have it at least more than once in each community, so that we can actually make that connection and interaction with them. And additionally, a hurdle that we had to get was we had to borrow a trailer from our mounted unit to transport the stuff. Hopefully in the future we can have a dedicated community services trailer so that we can keep the stuff there, so that'd be easier. Because the logistics for that was just kind of, who's going to go up to Carousel to get it and then back and forth, so that just to make it a little easier. And then we are looking at a different time slot, sir, because it was, even we're in a dress count uniform and it still was hot. So we're looking at either towards the evening time. The reason behind that, sir, was Colonial School District, they had their feeding program, and it was about that time slot. So I went with their direction in terms of when the kids came out, not thinking about how hot it would be. It seemed like it was like 110 every time we went out there. That's the pop-up play zone, we dubbed it, in a nutshell. Any questions?
Councilman Smiley? Go ahead, sir.
I didn't mean to cut you off, Councilman, but I would just like to note also, I'm Sergeant Wesley Reynolds. Anthony is one of our great officers in CSU, but I would like to mention that he also was promoted to the rank of captain in his military branch, as well as organizing book bag drive, and also organizing all these events this summer. He was promoted to the rank of captain in the military, so I think that was important to mention.
Thank you, sir.
Awesome.
Councilman Smiley.
We may need to get the law department involved in this, but as far as that trailer, maybe we can pull ATV and impound one of these unhooked trailers that's parked in the street. Kind of move to your program. So, I want you to have something nice.
Write that down.
So if you pull up there and hook tape buildings, something out front, just take it right back.
Gotcha.
Well, everything we've heard is fantastic. It's what we should be doing. And I think the creativity and the vision of the leadership and the department as a whole is what needs to continue to be out there in the community and have the community know who we are and be part of us and us part of them. So, anyone else have any questions? Co-Chairman Street.
You know, you got the gun already.
I just wanted to say that I think Anthony really kind of downplayed the significance of this. You know, I went out a few times and seen the interaction, because many of the communities that we went to and that he selected were communities that historically, when you look at it, they've been communities that when a lot of times individuals see us, we're coming in there to conduct business, and we usually are leaving with someone in handcuffs. And for us to come in there with just a completely different mindset, I think it really caught a lot of the community off guard, because I know when I went to Wilton, everybody wanted to, they kept asking me, what's going on? And, you know, we're setting up basketball courts and people are shutting down the street. And they're not, they just weren't used to it. And, you know, this all goes to the direction of our police department is, you know, we understand and we recognize that we're going to have to deal with criminal activity. And just as we put TAPS on the forefront and we talk about TAPS and we talk about going out, making arrests and getting guns and getting drugs and all of those things, and believe me, that's my passion, I love it. But I also understand and recognize that there's a need for us to have that equal passion for events and things of this nature. So anytime when this young man here has opportunity to speak about this and what he's done, I want him to get up front. I want him to talk about it. You know, and it's something that we want to celebrate in our police department. It's not all about, we don't make a difference in the community simply because of we're going out there and we're arresting somebody who has a gun or somebody who has drugs. It plays a part. But this isn't policing as it was when I first came on, when that was what it was all about. And we have to change. And we still have that mindset that we're going to go out and deal with those issues. But events like this goes a long ways. And so the impact that you had was tremendous. You know, I receive compliments all the time as if I did something. but this was your brainchild. And for that book bag giveaway that was held at DePauw, that was something special. I mean, I think it was a total of 258 book bags that were given away. There were kids there. There was food. They had pony. We had different people that came and volunteered. They did haircuts for all the children to go back and, you know, just to be a part of that, to be a part of it, and to see Newcastle County Police in the forefront and leading that charge along with council, it was a sight to see. And again, it's something that, you know, I wish we would have gotten the coverage on it, more of the media coverage, because I've never seen an event that was so well organized and so well received by the community. So my hat goes off to the Community Services Unit. We ask a lot of them, but not just the Community Services Unit. But we also have officers that are actually putting together different programs. We have Tracy Duffy, who's assigned in Foot Patrol up in Edgemoor. She has a program right now where it's girls and cops type dance that she's putting together that we're hoping to pull off next sometime in October, I think it is. So we're in the beginning stages with that. But those are the kind of events and those are the kind of interactions that we're going to have with the community to show that we are a part of the community and that we're here for them and that we're no different, we're no special. We're here to make a difference.
Forgot to mention, Sergeant and I were talking about, Wilmington Police Department reached out to us about the program as well. So we're actually going to reach out to them and try to do one, either beginning or ending of ours, joint thing, maybe at like Rodney Square, would make it a big type of festival type, Wilmington Festival. But you get the gist, something, a big thing where we can just have fun and do inside a jurisdictional thing and just let everybody know that we're one team.
Great job.
Yeah, Co-Chairman Street, then Councilman Sheldon.
I probably can't put into words how much I appreciate your presentation, your work, your leadership, and, you know, the event at PAL, you know, looks like y'all getting ready to turn it into a real PAL. Because it had been that level of police participation before. The walking officers, I'm not going to speak on, I'm sure Captain Cartier is going to talk about the walking officers, it is different. You know, but you get into true community policing, and it's a win-win, it's a major asset to children, major asset to the community. It's a major asset to the department because operationally, as we improve police-community relations, we're going to benefit from it as a department, as a community. So I think that was just an excellent presentation. And I
thank all of you for your work, your effort, and you know, being change agents in your own way as police officers is pretty special.
Councilman Shelton?
Yeah, I just want to commend also the PAL for letting me, you know, United Way did it, not Tim Shelton. And Mr. Smiley, Councilman Smiley was there. I thought that you can't get a better event than that. I mean, watching those kids get the shoes, they're called Lace, and like you said, somebody, I just have to say this one thing. Somebody took a wrong pair of shoes that was smaller than they could use, and he brought them back, and I know a young man asked if these were, I think they were size 11 and a half, and they wouldn't fit to one person. He took those, and he sat on the sidelines and opened them up, would take one out, put it back down. 10 minutes later, open it up. I mean, we made his summer that night. And other thing was the colonel really let me down because he wanted to get us on a horse. He said he was allergic to it. I said, great. I said, I'm not getting on unless he gets on. He got on. So, you know, I mean, I really thought he would stand strong. I know. So, but yes, those kind of events. those kind of events, I will more or less do it again, you know, to do this because even a suit jackets, kids need to get on a basketball court, but before they do, they need to get in a bus with a suit jacket, and they might not be able to go. We gave suit jackets, and I told anybody that in that development can take them. You know, if the parents have them, it's even good, too. But I just want to go more, but that was a great event. I hope we can capture on that again.
Thank you for your leadership, Councilman. Councilman Cartier.
Thank you. I just want to compliment all the officers involved in the concept behind the pop-up play area. I think that's really edgy. I think it's hip. And I think any way we can engage young people and build, you know, fellowship, camaraderie, trust, to see our county police officers as role models, people to be respected, people who like to have a good time. I think this is really, you know, that interface will build dividends for not only the youth involved, but it'll build dividends for the county police down the road. So any way we can do more of this, if you're looking for grant money, maybe we can pull something together here and assist. And I guess my final question is, what was a typical participation rate when you did one of the pop-up play activities?
It's about 30 to 40 in the 2 hour span. At one time, maybe 20 or so, but throughout the whole 2 hour span, it was about 30 to 40 participants. And that's because of what the colonel said. I think it was the hesitation of, what are you here for? So I think now the word is out now. I think going forward, we'll be able to do more of a social media push for it, far in advance now that it's out there. So I think we should have a better participation. My hopes will be that we have a better participation.
What was the grant and the budget that you utilized for this particular activity?
The budget was $1,500, and the grant came from HIDA, I believe.
Came from HIDA. Kevin Reeves. We reached out to Kevin Reeves from the U.S. Attorney's Office and HIDA. So we did get, I think it was $1,400.
14 or something around that
part. Small dollars invested for, I feel, probably very big yields and big gains. And I think this is a kind of direction, as the chief said, not only is law enforcement about going after the bad guys, but it's also building trust and building relationships in the community where the police are seen as positive for everybody. So. When do you plan on going back to this anytime soon, or what's the long-term plan?
Next year, the definite date, we have to discuss that. Because in the summer months, we just got to figure out what's best for. We take what we did this year, Like I said, I'm military, so we do after-action reports and stuff and say, hey, this was 10 things that went right, this 10 things that went wrong, how can we improve on the things that went wrong? So we haven't sat down and actually done that just yet, but we will.
But it definitely won't be at noon, so.
Yeah, definitely.
We're looking from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Go cool.
I'll keep a surprise if you get the response and concept.
Yes, sir.
Okay, we thank you again. Any other questions from council? Hearing none, we thank you. Colonel, update on the next police academy?
Next academy is scheduled for December 4th this year, 2017. And at this time, we're looking at having 20 officers in that academy. We have already did 4 pre-hires, and we have some others that are in the final stages before we offer them employment, and hopefully they get through those final 2 stages and we'll be able to hire them. And you know, we're excited about it, so we're moving in the right direction.
Okay. Anything on grants? I know Laurie was here earlier. Anything to report on the grant part of anything? Or
no, and not at this time. We don't have anything to report on it. On the grants, we did have some grants that were out there, but there have been some concerns about the sustainability if we were to get those grants, because we're talking about doing an increase in, possibly doing an increase in authorized strength. So there's some concerns there that may withhold us from actually moving forward with those at this time.
Okay. Hearing no other questions from council, comments from the public? Yes, sir.
Yeah, hi. Excuse the talk, but I'm 82 years old, and I still play ice hockey against 30-year-olds and broke my jaw on the jump. Okay. My name is Jerry Fulcher. I'm a former New York City police detective. Happened in black parents here, black people, I should say. I was born in Harlem. Shine shoes outside the Apollo Theater, and they used to sneak me in with them and lived a great life as a kid between my family and the neighbors and the black community who finally got together with the whites in Washington Heights and did a lot for what we did. Joined the New York City Police Department at age 21. Became a detective by the end of the first year. Never done before. Go home and check it with your computers. Detective Jerry Fulcher, youngest detective in the history of the New York City Police Department. I was 21 years old. As I say, do it now. I was asked by Albany, New York, Jerry, come up here and see if you can't do something with our crime wave. We're having a real problem, drugs coming from New York every Friday night and so on and so forth. I went out. I got together with the detectives and said, you will help anybody that you see needs help. For any reason. That's the start. The city has to realize that they have an obligation not just to be able to call policemen when they want them or need them or what have you. They were all taught that way. The first day, two detectives in the car, spot a guy leaning down with the tire of this car, obviously having the trouble. The two guys got up, went over. The guy jumped up and said, oh no, that's all right, officer. I'll go in the house. I know in New York and I'm allowed to fix your tire. And they said, take it easy. Maybe we can help you. No big deal. It's not a real serious thing we're talking here. The two of them knelt there and fixed the tire. One detective said, follow us back to the neighborhood police unit. I have an idea. You take him back. He calls up. Hey, Sal, you, when us cops with our personal cars come in, you give a 30% discount to all us cops, right? You do, yeah. Well, will you do this for the Arbor Hill community? These guys have cars up here, break down, so on and so forth. You will? Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. First step. 3 weeks later, I get a call. He said, Detective, I got to tell you this. Every Friday, two cars come up from New York. Five guys in each car, and they go to blank, blank, blank street and so on. They have a party and so on and so forth. My nephew came home and told me that they're really coming up there to sell drugs to all drug dealers in Arbor Hill. And I said, hang up this phone. You never made this call. Tell nobody about it, and I'll get back to you. Right? 3 weeks later, he calls us and says, the guys who are here. They said, okay. We got my guys there. We made an arrest of 64 people. The arrest went to trial. They got convicted. 64 people went to jail. Why? Because two cops helped somebody fix a tire. And that's what some of these cities have to start doing. What can I do that I don't have to lean on all the police every day? There's a lot more to this, and I'm giving you the short version. The state has to get it. I'm part of the short version. You know what? Anybody here ride Sunday buses? Sunday? No? You don't get on the bus Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, buses
are out there. Well, a couple thousand people, a couple hundred people do. I do, right? I had a radio talk show then at WDEL. I called the governor, the mayor, and Bart, and said, I'm filing a class action suit for not giving 36 years you run this bus and you never included a Sunday where people couldn't get the mass, couldn't get to church and so on. 2 months later, we got Sunday busing, didn't we? For those of you who do it. I step on a bus every day. I get on there, and the jokes start. Oh, it's Rosa. Rosa Parks, the one that, you know. And the other one say, hey, come over here. We know about your Mr. Jerry. We know about your Malcolm X situation. Anyway, I get off that bus. I make sure I get off the bus at a street in which they were shooting. Because I'm not going to let them dictate how my neighborhood is. I'm going to dictate it. I get off that, and unfortunately, and gentlemen, no insult involved with the police people, but they say, we'll talk to you, Mr. Jerry, but we're not going to talk to those cops. And what they're talking about is the bad shoots that I have seen here. As much as they hate to, people who say that, there have been at least six bad shoots in this city. People were killed by cops who didn't have to be. I did my own background paperwork on this whole thing, and it came up that I had 91 cases in which I could have and should have used my gun when I was a New York City policeman. I didn't shoot anybody. I had taught myself how to talk them down. And it wasn't easy, and it took time, but I did it. And that's what we need more of, too.
Jerry, we couldn't agree with you more. I think what we've heard from our county police today, I think you'll concur with what they're doing out in the communities today. More of that needs to be done,
right?
And everything, and we are clearly doing it here in the county.
But decisions, sir, too. In other words, you gave $200,000 to two New York City retired cops. Wrong.
Right.
Take five or six detectives. Give them the $200,000. Tell them to go up into every store and every situation that's around and say, this is a grant from the city, but you got to help us out.
Right.
You see this, see that,
right,
and see the other thing. You don't do it here.
Yeah. Well, we're
the only state in the country who, when we do have a shooting, we do not send an investigation out. No, all you do here in Delaware is go to the Attorney General's office and say, I felt my life was in danger. Goodbye. Go home. That's not the way you do it. That's why they suit you up the way they do. You need that, sir. You need that kind of attitude that you care enough about these people. All of us, as other people. Thank you.
Yep, we appreciate you coming in and sharing your thoughts. Thank you. All right, let's see. Any other public comment? Any other comment from council? Councilman?
Just real fast. Colonel, you know a little bit earlier today, you sent the press release out over the situations we were having in Glasgow Park where the individual was inappropriately touching the females in the park.
Yes, sir.
You know, I have advocated here for a long time now about, you know, the fact we need eyes in that park all the time.
Yes.
It's a large park. It's heavily attended. We had special services come in and give us, I think, a highly elevated estimate on some cameras. Probably didn't want to do it. I know we've talked about some cadets and all. We really need to move. We need to move on something down there before the word gets out. If you're a woman, don't go to the park. We can't have sexual predators running around there printing on the women.
Well, I agree with you, ma'am. That would be the concern of ours, and that's why, you know, we immediately took action and we had a surveillance team down there. We put a lot of resources down there, and we were able to come up with a suspect.
Not under control.
Making that arrest last night. And, you know, it is. And there's no question about it. And we're going to talk more about the cadet program and hopefully try to see what we can do in terms of the start of next year. But right now, you know, for the time being, we're going to have to just continue to try to police it the best way we can. Obviously, with this situation, we're going to put continue to have a presence down there, whether that be in the undercover capacity or just overt with having officers down there. So, yes, your concern and your point is well taken.
Coach Urban Street.
Did I hear you say you made an arrest?
Yes, sir.
Well done. And that sends a message by itself. Okay? That reduces whoever it is, now that he's been arrested, that sends a message to the rest of them that we'll get you. So keep up the good work. Thank you.
And I just want to say this real quick. You know, your concern about the park is valid. And what I think I want everybody to understand is that, you know, I go to the park, my wife goes to the park, I have family members that go to the park. So the same concerns that you have are the concerns that we have as well. You know, Glasgow Park is a large park. There's a lot of area to cover. And so we are going to look at it. We're going to continue. But I want to do more than just simply look at it. You know, for this to happen, that was why the mandate from me from the beginning was that whatever resources we have, let's put them into effect. Let's put them down there. Let's find out who this is. Because the last thing we wanted is for this individual to move from inappropriate touching to actual sexual assault. So again, you know, we are taking it seriously. We're going to work on it, and we're going to continue to monitor not only Glasgow Park but other parks as well.
Oh, absolutely, and that's exactly my point, Colonel, about the magnitude of resources that you had to put in, you know, to the park down there because of this. And anytime we have that many people, you know, congregated in that area, you know, there's going to be situations that arise, and that's why I was looking at potentially, you know, maybe we found a way to do the cameras, maybe we, you know, the cadets, something, some way, because I actually, you know, would like to see your resources, you know, dedicated other places where we have shootings and everything else going on, you know, but with you having to focus down there with so much resources, you know, because we don't engage the technology, I think, that's out there or whatever, you know, I mean, but you're doing what you have to do, and you're playing the cards that you have today, so, you know, again, thank you for that.
Okay. Thank you, Councilman. Thank you, Colonel. Motion's in order.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carry. Exactly.